Hi Naren, welcome Hi. To the podcast. Good to have you with us again. And let's straight away get to the point. We know that you've been in the industry for a very, very long time. You've spent like close to what, 2 decades now in the industry, Naren? All you fund managers, you know, swear by numbers. You swear by balance sheets, you swear by annual reports, you have Bloomberg terminal spreadsheets, all of that. But how important is it for you to, as a fund manager, to go behind the numbers? I mean, how important is it for you to, leave your balance sheets and annual reports aside? Can you get anything else of the company beyond these numbers?
Absolutely. I think numbers sometimes hide. If you and you periodically get such incidences like Satyam, which show you that you can't even remember the numbers.
Yeah.
If you look at the entire experience of aggressive financial services companies in the 2017 to 19 phase, If you had looked at the numbers in 2017, all that showed up was aggressive financial services companies.
Okay.
Problems didn't show up then. They showed up in 2019. The way I have seen it is that it is very critical that you have a good idea of history.
Okay.
And suppose you have a newly listed company.
Okay.
I have seen that in any newly listed company, till one bull and bear market is over, you can't predict that company.
Okay.
I'm not saying it if an big industrial group lists a company, then this rule doesn't apply.
Okay.
But if you look at any of the newly listed companies, if you go through one bear and bull market cycle, you understand the promoter.
Okay.
So till that point of time, you can look at balance sheets, but those balance sheets don't work. Because if you look at a famous company called Deccan Chronicle, they showed cash, they did buyback.
Okay.
But finally, you know, they everything came apart.
Yeah.
And the lessons is that newly listed company, you have to be careful. And newly listed companies show their problems in the first big bear market, which is why in one event I mentioned that in India, my 30 years of financial markets show that even corporate governance is cyclical.
Okay.
And if you looked at infrastructure companies in 2006-07, they threatened to show very high corporate governance companies, many of them.
Okay.
And outside a few of them now, many of the so-called good corporate governance companies, they deteriorated.
Okay.
And that's why I would say that it's not very important to only look at the numbers. And, when we meet companies and if you have had a long bull market in any sector, as the bull market in that sector progresses, more and more companies I find becoming overconfident.
Okay.
It was very interesting for me that in 2007, there was a company which came to me and called me from Delhi and told me, and it was in the steel area.
Steel area. Okay.
And he called me from Delhi and told me, I'm coming tomorrow.
Okay.
I used to own 5% of that company.
Okay. So you were already invested.
I was already invested. I'm coming tomorrow. Today I've got coal mine, so I'm coming tomorrow to meet you. So I met him the next day. He said, yesterday I got coal mine. Tomorrow I'm going to Delhi. I'll sign the power purchase agreement.
Okay.
And day after tomorrow, I'll get private equity money.
Okay.
So I asked him, why are you in such a hurry? After all, you're in steel. Why don't you stay with steel? Why do you want to go to power?
Mm.
So he said, no, I want to become Tata.
Okay.
And he had huge Jamshedpur links.
Okay.
So I told him, Jamshedpur Tata was built in 100 years.
Mm.
So you want to do what Jamshedpur Tata did in 100 years in 10 years?
Mm.
He said, yes.
Mm.
So recently I met him in a flight.
Okay.
And So he was traveling economy.
Okay.
And so I asked him what happened. He said, now I come for my CDR meeting, my debt restructuring meeting.
Oh, okay.
So what happens is that, the most interesting, I explained this entire thing to one pharma company in 2015. And I had gone with two other people from my company. I told them, see, now you've had 7-8 years of a big bull market. So after 7-8 years of a big bull market, normally companies do dangerous acquisitions.
Okay.
So I asked that pharma company, you must be doing an acquisition which can lead to value destruction. And I use these words.
Okay.
And my two colleagues who came with me got damn annoyed with me. So the company CEO told me, what the hell are you thinking? 8 years I have created shareholder value. Will I do it? And the beauty was, 6 months later, they did a decent sized acquisition.
Okay.
And about 6 months back, they wrote off 40% of their acquisition as write off for a bad acquisition.
Okay.
And because somewhere the fourth, fifth, sixth year, seventh year of a bull market in any sector, is most dangerous.
Okay. So you're saying that you have to look at all these nuances. You have to look at what promoters do, how they manage, how they conduct the business. It's not just what the numbers that you see on paper.
Yes.
Okay. In your experience, when you meet the management, and obviously you started by speaking about a new company, a newly listed company. Obviously, they're very eager to get your money. They're very eager to be in all fund managers' portfolios or as many portfolios as possible. So, you know, they say a lot of things. They claim a lot of things in an arena where there is so little research available. How do you assess the honesty of a promoter?
First is, you sometimes get it wrong.
Okay.
It's not always you get it right.
So fund managers do make mistakes.
Yeah, we all make mistakes, and that is the only hope is we learn from our previous mistakes.
Okay.
So my colleague puts it right that the lower you go down in an organization and you ask questions, you get much better answers.
But are you giving the access to go lower down the company?
So that's why, as you mentioned, sometimes you do factory visits.
Okay.
You ask innocuous questions to people lower down.
Okay.
And sometimes you get very good answers out of them.
What do you normally look at when you go for a factory visit? I mean, I'm sure it's all organized.
So first is, it's organized.
It's organized, yeah.
So once sanitized, it is organized. What happens is people know what to tell any fund manager who's doing a factory visit.
Yeah.
As it is, we know very little about any single sector. So it's very easy. But what happens is, you ask people who are not supposed to give you gyan in a factory visit.
Okay.
And see how they respond.
Okay.
And sometimes you need to be able to understand the local milieu.
Okay.
So if I were to visit Tamil Nadu and ask a factory person a question, I'll get a much better response.
Correct.
Than if I were to ask in my Hindi to a factory in Uttar Pradesh, it won't give you this right response.
Okay.
So I believe that you have to function as a detective. And you'll be interested to note that, you know, I spent some time in project finance.
Okay.
And
this is before your ICICI, much
before my mutual fund ICICI days. Yeah. And there, you know, what I've seen is, the more there are statements saying this person visiting, welcome. And if they, like, there is a company which took us on a chartered coach.
Okay.
And railway coach. And if you see any of such things, these are all big red signals.
Okay.
The worst that they take you in, suppose they take you in a lower category car, it is better than if they take you in a Merc.
Okay.
In my personal experience, the better a company has prepared for your visit, sometimes it is it's a more dangerous investment.
So basically the company has made elaborate arrangements to give you as good an impression as possible for you to sort of, in shielding away what needs to be shielded away perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And, you know, when you talk to promoters, what do you expect? Like, what do you want to see in a promoter when you go and say, like, suppose everything is in place, so the numbers are in place, the reports, annual reports, everything is in place, the corporate governance is also reasonably in place, okay, and you're meeting this company, let's say, for the first time. What do you, what can you see in a promoter that makes you comfortable, or what can make you uncomfortable?
Actually, this first time is a big problem. It's much more difficult to judge on the first time.
Okay.
See, it's like I do monthly distributor con calls. So okay. If I do it monthly over a period of time, people hear it and say, this is what is being communicated.
Okay.
So when you go the first time, you don't necessarily get too captivated. But if you meet people over a period of time, let's say every 6 months you meet a company, then over a period of time you judge how much that person is miscommunicating to you, how much that person is actually telling you the truth. So I would say that more than the first time, it is the fifth time, the sixth time, the seventh time where things actually work much better. Because in the first time, you don't know that person. It is like a newly listed company where you have to be cautious. Here, the first time, you have to be cautious. So, but there, frankly, we look more whether who's the seller, is the promoter selling, is the private equity selling. If the private equity is selling, is the private equity keeping a part of the stake with back with them?
Okay.
Are they selling all that they have? Are they selling it at the first possible opportunity?
Okay.
What kind of near-term past financial results have been seen? So, in fact, very often, you know, it's very funny. You'll have a company which will show a profit of 1 crore 1 year. Next year will be 2 crore. Third year will be 4 crore. Fifth year will be 8 crore. And sixth year will be 16 crore. And then the issue will happen. So, if you ask people, why did it go up in geometric progression, they'll give you some answers. But you have to worry about it. So, I believe that, you know, if you look at it, most investors don't realize that we are managing public money. When we are managing public money, we have to err on the side of caution. So, if you see a geometric progression in profits, I'm trained to disbelieve. And that is part of it. Despite all that, despite all our skepticism, we still make mistakes.
And do you talk to the ecosystem around the company to find out more about it?
The ecosystem is incredibly helpful.
Give me an instance, any company,
like take for example all the aggressive financial services companies. Do you think we could have judged their aggression by meeting them? No. They always showed numbers which were phenomenal. Higher growth and no NPLs.
That would have come across as an ambition rather than...
But if you met the peer group, clearly the peer group always there is more envy. So they are out of envy. They actually part with more information on their peers than on them. So you don't ask them on them. But if you ask them, how come this company is doing so well, then we get a lot of information. And frankly, the ecosystem, the supplier, the customer, how the supplier gets paid. How the if you talk a lower level employee, whether the employee is paid, what is the employee turnover? And today you can go and look at LinkedIn and find out where that person has gone from which place to another place. So all these things also you get an idea of what is happening. But the problem today is that we have a lot of information. But you know, sometimes the more information you have, the more difficult it becomes to take a decision, because you are always thinking, this is positive, that is negative, this is positive, that is negative, this valuation is captured, this valuation is not captured. So if you are asking me, in the olden days when information was such a difficult commodity, it was much easier to take decisions.
Because today there is overload of information.
There is just too much of information.
And before you start doing your research, there's a social media.
Yes, yes.
How much do you rely on news that comes around in the media and the social media, for instance? I mean, of course, there is a whole lot of news that ought to be ignored, but there is a whole lot of news that, you know, you can get it from there firsthand. Do you ever look at social media for your work?
At one point of time, I used to be very skeptical on social media and media, everything. Now, if something is mentioned, you have to immediately put it into your antenna. And you have to think what percentage something could be true.
Okay.
And interestingly, I always use one of my gurus, Anthony Bolton's view. You also look at the chart before you're buying.
Okay.
Look at the chart after, if you're selling, before you are selling, look at the chart. That also tells you how many people may know what is happening in the company.
Hmm.
So if you have a chart which shows a big upside move and you're thinking something great is going to happen, it means that everyone knows it.
Yeah.
And today you have clear rules which are applicable to all of us.
Hmm.
So we have to be very careful that we don't get into any of these unpublished sensitive information cases.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a mandate to do any unpublished sensitive information based investing today.
Correct.
So actually, that's why we have to be very careful at this point of time that we don't trade on any such things.
Okay.
But we read a lot of things, and actually, to be fair, we get a bit confused.
Okay. But you read a lot of books also, no, Naren? I mean,
yeah,
you've always spoken at public forums that you read a lot, Howard Marks is look up to. What kind of inputs do you get from these investment gurus abroad, and any particular takeaway or biggest takeaway that you can think that you have incorporated that in your work?
I think a lot, actually. And I think the post-2008 environment, where internet became popular and much more popular in India, and there's so much tweets and so much you get, YouTubes, you can hear all my gurus. Like from Howard Marks, I learned cycles.
Okay.
From Anthony Bolton, I realized the importance of looking at chart before you buy and before you sell. From Michael Mobison, I learned about pre-mortems.
Okay.
From James Pontia, I learned about contrarianism.
Okay.
I think the advantage of looking at global gurus is they don't have the biases on a specific Indian company. If you look at Indian gurus, what happens is each of us have our biases.
Hmm.
If you look at any big investor in India, they will all have their biases.
Okay.
So that's why I think, when I look at global gurus, it's much easier to understand theory from them because they don't talk on Indian companies. So the biases are not there on Indian companies. And I think it's very important. If you ask me to be a good investor, you need to read, you need to think, and you need to be able to analyze businesses.
Okay.
I think all three are important. And if you ask me, there are people who read and who analyze businesses, but you also have to find time to think what you have read and what you have and synthesize it into an investment.
Okay. So, Naren, that's very interesting. Tell me, how do you manage your portfolios in these kind of slow economies? You've been saying this on public platforms for quite some time now, that we have got into a bubble territory, we've got into an overvaluation territory, and that time people didn't believe you much, but then finally it came true when the markets kind of peaked and the fundamentals were found wanting. But now that we are in that territory, how do you manage in these kind of slow economies?
So I think in 2017, small and mid caps were overvalued. Large caps at that point of time was not so overvalued. Today, quality is overvalued.
Okay.
So actually, interestingly, what happens is at different points of time, different parts of the market are getting overvalued. So instead of the whole market getting overvalued, you're seeing these pockets. See, actually, the way we have been looking at it is that if you look at a product like Balanced Advantage Fund, which is our largest fund, it is actually beneficial for either moderate return markets or reasonably slow growth economies. So I would say that our entire product strategy of Balanced Advantage Fund itself was built for a slow growing economy, not an 8% growing with huge earnings growth. So I think there are still challenges. The challenges is if quality stocks keep going up, then...
But do you still buy?
You don't buy, you take the pain and go through the stress. Because you can't at after, if you didn't buy at 40 PE, you can't buy at 60 PE. So it doesn't look logical. So, you know, you have to hope for the pain one day to subside. Like what happened in small and mid caps, where suddenly one day small and mid caps started underperforming. One day you keep hoping that quality stocks will also underperform, which is quite likely to happen. The question is, timing is the challenge. And till your timing happens, you have the challenge of performance pressures, that too when you're managing public money, other people's money. That challenge is certainly there. But I don't worry too much, because in the long run, markets are rational.
Okay. But you have these products. You have a Balanced Advantage product that does an asset allocation type. You have a dynamic fund that's also quite big and does asset allocation. Yeah. But you know, at one point in time, Shankaran Naren was very famous for managing long only kind of portfolios, buy something like a blue chip kind of a thing, you know, or like a value discovery funds. Now obviously these funds have become quite big in size, so you know, at this stage of your career and in these kind of markets and with the growth that your genuine long oriented funds have already experienced, do you find yourself in a kind of a comfort zone when you are managing, let's say, an asset allocation kind of a product where you can do something in these kind of markets? Or do you still long for the challenge to sort of manage something like a value discovery fund or blue chip fund, which may not give you instant gratification, but which will give you, hopefully, with your skills and with your aptitude, would pay you dividends, but a few years down the line?
No, basically, I came to a conclusion, special situation investing was very, very interesting. And I saw the long experiences of special situation investing all over the world. So actually, we launched a special situation fund, which is called India Opportunities, which doesn't have too much assets under management.
Okay.
If you look at it, last month, for example, and this is public data, so we never used to have Infosys in that fund because the buyback was over, so we had zero Infosys. Last month, what happened was there was a special situation in the form of a whistleblower.
Yeah.
So we got a good opportunity to actually build a good weightage in Infosys.
So you actually took the occasion to sort
occasion.
Of get inside.
So the basic thesis of a special situation, which is the India Opportunities, is we keep waiting for special situation.
That's your contrarian.
Yeah, it is not
out.
Contrarian, it's special situation.
Okay.
And you know, periodically you'll see something goes wrong. And in this world, something goes wrong periodically. You'll have some problem in a NEO engine.
Okay.
You'll have some problem in an FDA inspection. You will have some problem like what happened in the whistleblower incident. So frankly, we get a lot of such opportunities, which goes back to my old hat of doing stock picking in a special situation.
Stock picking from Chennai, your investment circle out there. But you don't think it was a little too swift to sort of for you to get inside into this particular company or into this particular stock when things are still developing?
These are all stocks which we are all continuously looking at.
Okay.
It is not that, as I say Prudential, we have 15 analysts looking at all these stocks all the time.
Okay.
So already the base work is done. It is just that we are looking for that special situation to invest.
Okay.
And that's what we try to do.
So, Naren, at this stage of your career, you know, looking back, you've managed, you've dabbled into small caps, mid caps quite well, you've done large caps also, and you've had an impeccable track record in ICICI Mutual Fund, and even before that also. Do you feel that the legacy is kind of a burden for you to take? Does it stop you from taking risks at this point in time? Do you think you've become a little bit too conservative? Does it... You know, you feel that, you know, now that so much of my track record, I don't want to take so much of risk and risk it.
I don't know, but I'm very conscious of the fact that big fund managers outside India, like Woodford, if you read about Bill Miller, you read about them, you realize that some of them have made mistakes at the after big mistakes. Okay. If you look at Woodford case, and it's very fascinating to read about how a very good fund manager went drunk or committed hubris and made these mistakes. So I believe that, you know, the challenge is that one should always be grounded. One should always realize that the markets can be much bigger than any fund manager in any country, including India. And one has to be logical in your process of investing. And you have to continue with it. I think the thrill of markets has always been significant. If you look at it, each year is a new year. If you had looked at it, no one could have predicted, like in 2019 was a year where people worried about credit. Okay. Frankly, all the credit funds have in our basket have done well, but every day people worry about credit.
Okay.
So I think these kind of interesting situations do come up, and I believe that the job of investing is attractive because every day is a new day.
But does it stop you from taking additional risk like you used to take before?
No, not at all.
You still find yourself as...
Not at all. If today there are a few select PSUs where I've invested in, select few metal stocks I've invested in, and frankly, no one in the market would say that these are all very, very commonplace kind of decisions that we have taken, because we are buying stocks at single digit PE and below book, and still they don't perform. Whereas if you had bought a 60 PE stock belonging to a quality company, it becomes 70 PE. So that's the kind of situation we are in. But I think the job is interesting because markets are always evolving. And economies are always evolving, and newer kind of problems come up, newer kind of investing techniques come up, and we have to keep ourselves updated with what is happening. So I find that interesting.
How important is peer validation to you?
Peer validation is obviously, see, we are managing public money, and we would want Indian citizens to invest with us. But I would say that I do watch all the big investors, big investment companies out of India, what they are doing.
Okay.
I would even watch what, clearly I would watch what LIC is doing.
Okay.
Because LIC is the biggest financial institution in India in equity market.
Yeah.
So we watch what the biggest US investors are doing. And you know, the ETF boom has also been happening globally. So
that's
we
true.
Watch all these things. So I would say that it can never be that you are not focused, you are looking at only your fund. You have to watch how others, Warren Buffett says, how you conduct your affairs has to be based on how others conduct their affairs. Because if they are willing to take exceptional risk, you should be careful. And if they are too cautious, you should be more aggressive. So I believe in that principle.
Okay. Do you look at other fund houses, portfolios?
Certainly do. Certainly
does it give you does it give you a kick, for instance, if you are the first one to come in a particular stock and then you see that stock reflected in other portfolios, or the other way around? There are you may have let go of a particular company for whatever reason, but then later on you find the same company in other portfolios.
Sometimes we also make mistakes. So what happens is that it's very useful to understand what was the thought process behind some other fund taking a very big position in some a stock where we don't have. So what it encourages within our company to have a discussion on what was their thought process and where is our thought process, and it encourages a discussion of whether we are right or they are right.
Do you pick up the phone and speak to your contemporaries in the industry?
We may not do that as openly. We may not do that as openly. But you have to remember there are brokers who are dealing with us and with them.
Correct.
And sometimes we get to know how other investment institutions are looking at a stock from them. Sometimes without them naming the counterparty, but how they are looking at a stock and how we are looking at it. And every day between 8:30 and 8:40, we encourage our top brokers to communicate what they think of our portfolio and what they would do if they were to be running our portfolio, what they would change by selling from our portfolio.
Okay.
And that's how we start the day nowadays every day.
So tell me something, you brought this up, it's quite interesting. I mean, fund managers talk to a lot of sell side analysts also.
Yes.
And ICICI Prudential being one of the largest fund houses in the country, your research team is also quite capable. You have a large research team. How much do you rely on sell side brokers' research? How much do you rely on your own research? Do you, if there is a contrarian position, how do you deal with that?
See, on the decision making, we actually rely on our internal analysts. But the internal analysts talk to almost all the sell side analysts. So I would say through the sell side analyst, our internal analyst does more work on that and comes to a conclusion when we use the internal analyst. But the role of the sell side analyst in helping us form a view, particularly in the top 100 stocks, is pretty significant.
Okay.
But the final decision is ours. The final analysis are hard, but a lot of inputs come from very good sell-side analysts all over India.
So I'm wondering about the primary research. In the large companies, obviously, there's so much of research floating around. So you do rely on a lot of sell-side analysts' research on the large companies.
Yes.
When you go down the line, let's say the next 100 or the 200 companies, that's...
I think in small caps, we are forced to do much more of our own work.
Okay.
And that also is a cycle. In 2017, our sell side created a lot of small cap analysts.
Yes.
Now, if flows don't come, they actually, the small cap analyst numbers keep coming down.
Okay.
So you'll slowly see many of the companies' coverage coming down.
Okay.
So at that point of time, we have to completely rely on our internal analysts.
Okay.
But and the inputs can't come from so much.
And
from
you do go and your team, you do go and meet the company managements. You do
very
go
much.
Do you yourself do that?
I myself do it. I would want to do more. But the challenge is how efficiently I manage my time.
Okay.
And I think there is scope to manage my time more efficiently.
How do you spend your weekends, Narya?
Updating myself. There's so much of pending research reading I have to do over the weekends.
Okay.
Because
tell me, you work on your weekends also.
Yeah, that we do.
Okay.
In fact, the most productive working day is always Sunday.
Really?
Because it's the easiest, because you have least interruptions like WhatsApp and various other things. So actually we find Sunday, I find Sunday is my day to catch up on research most of the time actually.
Then in last question, you've mentioned about books, you've mentioned about gurus. Now tell us three books that you would want our listeners to read.
See, I always say the Checklist Manifesto of Atul Gawande is a book which is phenomenal for everything that you do.
Okay.
Clearly, if you ask me, More Than You Know by Michael Mobison is a very, very interesting book written by Michael Mobison.
Okay.
James Montier has written a book which is called as a small book on value investing. That's a very interesting book.
Okay.
And Howard Marks, everything he has written is on the web on oaktreecapital.com. But he has written a good book on cycles and another good book on what it takes to be a thoughtful investor.
Okay. Thank you very much,
Thank you.
For your frank and very honest views.
Thank you.